So it looks like that's a pretty significant slowdown. Highway 1 southbound just outside of Aptos. KSCO presents the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, there's real traffic out there. Something I'll be looking forward to. Not.
That's true. Boy, you could really talk a lot about how great it's been during the
no traffic
shelter at home.
Yeah. So this hour, we're going to look at a little bit at the entertainment industry. As you all have been probably cocooning and watching Netflix and Amazon Prime and the History Channel and
really becoming familiar with your screen in a whole new way.
And all that kind of stuff. How is this landscape shifting now that Hollywood can't work? I think 750,000 people are out of work down there, at least during this broadcast. Perhaps if they'll be coming back, or maybe they'll come back differently. And to help us with this question, we have Brent Leonard on the line, a film director, producer, music video director. He used to live here in Santa Cruz back in the 80s and early 90s. Did The Lawnmower Man from here and Virtuosity, which brought Russell Crowe to America, first film that he shot in this country. And has been involved lately with the new media as well. So, Brent, you know, like virtual reality. Maybe virtual reality will pick up some speed as a result of this. One of the things to discuss today. So welcome, Brent. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Good to be here.
Yeah. Good to have you. So are you sheltering in place down in L.A.?
I am. I'm in West Hollywood. Uh-huh. It's very calm here.
What are the freeways like?
they're very calm. And, you know, that's a new vibe for Los Angeles, that's for sure. I mean, you know, the weather is turning nice into our late spring, summer weather here now. And and so people are out. I'd say 50% are wearing masks, 50% are rebelling against that.
50-50,
and,
huh?
You know, but traffic is, because, you know, people aren't really going to work yet, and restaurants aren't happening and all of that. So it's the one thing, the fixture of Southern California that's definitely changed is traffic and the air and the sky look very, very clear.
Wow. Well, how about the beaches?
Yeah. I haven't gone to the beach. I don't live by the beach anymore. I used to live by the beach for many years, but I moved inland, so I haven't even ventured down there.
Okay. Well, how have the big studios changed their overall behavior as a result of this?
Well, it's more than an overall behavior change. This is like, man, this is a crazy, crazy-ass time of change. And some of the trends that were already going on, like the contraction of the theatrical market because of streaming, because of all the different subscription models that are really the center of the entertainment business now.
Yeah.
That's just been kicked into high gear, and I don't think it's ever going to return to the normal it ever was.
Want the theaters and the movie theaters open again?
They're not. No, there's no theaters open. In many places, theaters are not open, even in places that are opening up.
But they will be, though, in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of trepidation sitting a foot away from somebody in a movie theater. And also the fact that that is opening up in a couple of weeks, I think, is kind of crazy. I've been looking at the epidemiologists and what they're saying, and as opposed to the political pundits. And
the science. You're looking at the science.
Yeah, this is a serious thing. Opening up too soon, going into movie theaters. Basically, a lot of these protests where there were anti-lockdown protests and people gathered in crowds, there's been a huge percentage of those crowds that have gotten infected.
Hey, let me give you the latest statistics for Los Angeles County. There are 38,451 confirmed cases, of which 477 are new today, as of yesterday. There have been 1,839 deaths, of which 18 are new today. So it's definitely real. It's raging. And it's very different there than it is here in Santa Cruz, where there really hasn't been much activity. I mean, there are about a half a dozen new cases, but by and large, there's only about 10 to 20 people in the entire county who are sick. Everybody else is either recovered or there were two deaths of the 166 total confirmed cases.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's hard about this is that it is very regional and different in different regions depending on the density of people. The thing, though, that is kind of an X factor in that is even in places where it's less dense, if places where it's more dense start to loosen up, that could change because of travel. And it's just a really, they don't know enough right now for us to just make really informed decisions. That's one of the major tenets of what I've been studying, which is they just don't know enough. They don't even know a lot about the virus itself and what, you know, how it's affecting the body. There's all these different ways that it seems to be affecting people. There's a big study that has to happen here in order to really make truly informed decisions. At the same time, places like Santa Cruz where you've got two people sick or whatever, you know, you can see why there's a huge trend to open up and get people back to their lives. So
yeah, like most of the country, actually.
It's about 15 people who are currently sick. Two deaths. Yeah. 165.
So ironically enough, Santa Clara County has been a hot spot up here.
So there are hot spots and there are not hot spots. But that means the thing is out there and it's raging. It is raging. It doesn't mean that we can just make blanket assumptions. You know, in terms of the film business, as you asked about, people are scrambling to figure out how to come up with new protocols. I've actually been working on a protocol myself called Safe, Secure, Alternative Filmmaking Environment, which is based around health covenants. It's based around also utilizing certain technological innovations that have not been absorbed or brought into the tradition of the film business because of tradition, because of customs, because of the way things have been done.
You mean like virtual sets?
That's one sort of obvious one, but things that actually would reduce the amount of people around the camera, the way in which images are acquired. There's just a lot of technical innovation that could be brought into a whole new filmmaking or media creation process. And that's one of the things I've been focused on with my company for a while, which is this idea of world building and creating a world building process that is not mired in 1935 thinking and the way in which films and television and media have been created so long because so many technologies that actually
can redefine
innovate
it,
on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an inflection point. Right now we're in an inflection point, that's for sure.
Okay, so the old model was to go to a studio and to have big sets and sound stages and make movies under lights. Help us paint the picture to what the new model looks like.
Well, it's just contracting the amount of people that are necessary.
You still have stages? You still have, studios?
Yeah, there'll still be stages. There'll still be, like, the whole virtual sets thing is based around giant LED walls projecting what used to be called rear projection. All these things go back to traditions.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin and rear projection.
Rear projection, front projection, all these things. We're just doing them now with tracking a virtual camera, allowing that composite to happen in camera as opposed to shooting green screen and happening in post-process. So that stuff really doesn't shift a lot of the safety requirements around the new normal that will come up. So it really is using technologies that would actually create collaboration at a distance for pre-production, as an example.
That's
for post-production. I mean, most of pre-production and post-production can be done with collaboration at a distance. And, you know, this brings up an overall thing.
Yeah, it does. Hold that thought for a second. We have to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Talking to Brett Leonard on the future of media, really.
Collaboration after the break.
Down in L.A. Okay, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Brett Leonard in L.A. about the futures of the dream factories, how they're evolving. And you sort of mentioned just before the break, decentralized media production, post and during process. That's all changing?
It's going to have to. There's resistance to everything, of course. Even when the whole species gets hit upside the head with a 2x4, it is right now. Collaboration at a distance tools, what's using a virtual studio concept. I mean, this is actually the way I produce films and media for many, many years. As you guys know, you were around.
Yeah.
I used to be not normal to do it that way at all. and now it's becoming something that's going to be a necessity. But there's a larger inflection point here that is mirrored by this. We're in the inflection point where virtual experience, what I call VX, virtual experience writ large, is becoming central to so many verticals and areas in human activity.
Film just and media just being a fine example of that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is an inflection point where suddenly virtual experience, everyone's doing Zoom calls, everyone's doing trying to find ways of social interaction that are more intimate, that are more compelling, and the virtual technologies that are out there that have been percolating now for a number of years, and that some of us have been working with, like myself and others, It's really coming to the fore at this moment, not just for media production itself, but as a medium for human intimacy and communication.
Sure. And I have a sister in the banking industry, and they're thinking of keeping everyone at home for a while because they have someone to be working just fine doing it that way.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I've heard from many people that have been doing their jobs from home. They're saying, I could have been doing this like this for the past 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, the idea that you have to go to an office cubicle in a downtown skyscraper is not necessarily in the 21st century.
Right. Do I want to be in that little cubicle, or do I want to be in that nice little place I set up behind my house?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the whole idea of nesting and then virtual nesting, having virtual connection within the nest is, you know, look, there's a lot of issues that come off of this that are fascinating to talk about and also tell stories about, which is what I'm mostly interested in.
Yes.
And it's what does become of human intimacy, what becomes of the way in which we collaborate and experience each other. And we're starting to see all that by having to be so remotely connected for now a couple months. It's already starting to affect people psychologically. I don't know if you've seen it, but...
Yeah, sure.
It's a real thing. And there is challenges to it. There are positives to it. There are all the spectrum of human issues that really are brought up by this. How we embrace this, both ethically and from a human intimacy standpoint, the stakes are incredibly high right now.
Mm. Yes, yes. Now, you said you've been pioneering some of these protocols already. Can you give us an example of what you think you helped create that will become more in the forefront now?
Just really aggregating a lot of things that haven't been aggregated before. I mean, I happen to have been completing a feature film project called Triumph, stars Terrence Howard and R.G. Mitty from Breaking Bad, and I was in the final stages of post-production when the coronavirus pandemic hit.
Wow.
Because it's also a seller's market right now, the producers were very anxious to finish the movie, so we finished it with remote collaboration tools.
Wow.
All the final ADR, automatic dyro replacement, or what used to be called looping, all that was done remotely because a lot of the actors were in different cities, and no one wanted to come into the same place, of course. So there are systems where you can connect to a remote audio session, and I was able to direct the actors in the ADR in multiple different cities.
Really, from home?
Yeah, right from home, exactly. And some of the editorial took place that way, and final mix. So I've already been playing with the ways in which to finish a very extensive media project like a feature film remotely.
Yeah.
And for me, though, I've used a lot of these tools before because I was very interested in virtual studio production process early on as an efficiency that allowed me to complete films like Virtuosity and the incredibly contracted time schedule that they were. So I had to build that muscle in other projects, and now it's something that needs to be extended into a greater protocol because the insurance, we're talking to bonding companies and insurance companies that are going to require a new protocol in order for there to be less liability on the production's part, on the, you know, individual to individual's part in the context of media production. So there's a whole legal framework and insurance framework, which is interdependent on some of these other things we're talking about.
Two whole other worlds in and of themselves that are probably being transformed by this process.
Yeah, so one of the reasons I started working on SAFE, Secure Alternative Filmmaking Environment, is because I have some other feature film projects and other projects that want to go, and the financiers want to know, well, how are we going to do this in this period of time?
Yeah.
And so I've been coming up with a protocol, and now I'm starting to work with people that are talking to the insurance companies to actually create a new protocol for film production in the new normal.
Mm. Now, do we have enough bandwidth to do all this at this point in time, or do you have a special line to deal with this from your home?
I mean, as this gets more and more extensive and complex, getting fiber optic, getting things in that are going to be
Starlink, 5G,
extending the capability is going to be necessary. Even though, as an example, on a film set, we need to get it down to where there can be a 10 or less on a film set, no matter what the scene is, utilizing technologies like autofocus technologies, an example that have been relegated primarily to the consumer sector, maybe the prosumer sector, but really have never gotten into professional use. Except in like wildlife photography and things like that.
Yeah.
It can change the nature of how image acquisition is created and the nature of how many people have to be congregated around a camera, et cetera, et cetera. And these are things that have been around for a while and have become very, very sophisticated, but have not been drawn into professional media production because of tradition, because of customs, and because people are trying to keep their job status.
Right, you had focus pullers whose job was just to focus, and there's a whole art form in and of itself, right?
Exactly. And look, there is an art to focus pulling. I worked with some of the best focus pullers in the business, and they're literally magical beings because they can do something. But we're in a moment where we have to leverage off of technological innovation and make this more efficient from the number of people, because this is not going to change super rapidly. There's going to be a new normal, I believe, where people are not going to want to just go back to swapping spit and hugging and kissing and all that on the context of a film set because of the nature. Now, I'm going to miss all those things.
Yeah.
But this is this reality we're living in.
Who knows what... there's some things we are becoming aware of, like the antibody test. Now, I actually took one recently, and it takes 10 minutes, and you find out if you're negative or not. And now you should, 10 minutes is nothing for a production set. I mean, everyone could do that, right?
All of these tests are the tests are going to be absolutely de rigueur, absolutely on a very regular basis, and actually health covenants are going to be based on the testing protocols, and those health covenants will be at the core of limiting liability for insurance, limiting liability for producers and investors and individuals with each other. So it's the health covenants connected to an actual real testing regime, which of course is what should be going on a nationwide basis, which is not. This is just showing our country to be somewhat backward. That aspect of it is really going to be at the core of certain industries like the media production industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. And now, what about the intersection of politics with this? There's a new H.R. 6666 Act in front of the House. Did you hear about this? It's a contact tracing act.
And, yeah.
it kind of gives medical rights more than constitutional rights. So it's going to start clashing with American sense of freedom.
No matter what, before the pandemic and now since the pandemic, we are in a moment of total transmortification of what the American representative democratic system is all about.
It seems
whatever side you're on any of that, it is a time of radical change of that, the nature of what America has been and what it's going to be. Now, some people think we're going to go back to what it used to be. It's never going backwards. It's only going forwards to something different.
Well, hopefully we figured out how to create more freedom out of this rather than less, if we're at that inflection point. And what does that look like?
I totally agree.
But
if you look at what's going on around the world, most autocratic rulers have not utilized this moment to increase freedoms.
We're opportunistic monkeys. Everyone's going to try to take it and run with it, whatever belief system they have. So given that circumstance, how can opportunistically, how can we make it better?
And let's consider that right after we go back to another break here on the Dr. Future Show.
All right, we'll see you in a minute.
With our guest, Brett Leonard.
Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We're talking to Brett Leonard down in L.A., who's a feature filmmaker, talking about the future of media. And Brett, surprisingly enough, our science correspondent, Bobby Wilder, worked on one of your movies, I believe. Bobby, Bobby, you there?
Yes.
Yeah, which movies did you work on?
It was Virtuosity. This is 94, 95.
Where were you working at the time? Were you at a shop that was doing some of the
I was working with Dan Mapes and CyberLab 7.
Oh.
And
I
built the 12 computers in the net rendering farm for the
gotcha.
Virtual images. So I was just the engineer that developed that net rendering farm.
Thank you very much. It worked.
Yeah.
You know, at that time, it connects to our conversation now because at that time, the way we did the effects on Virtuosity was radical. I mean, we were using Pentium 90s.
And
that was
Pentium 1s.
To use 3D Studio Max. And this was at a moment when, you know, this was a big Paramount studio film, and people did not do that on those kinds of films. And it actually changed the effects business. So you were definitely part of that, man. And it was a big inflection point. Of course, I had assassins out for me from Silicon Graphics because we were changing the whole nature of what the computers that could be used and the talent base that could be used, you know, to create effects. Because we, you know, we grabbed a lot of very interesting cyberpunk artists from the Bay Area who were working in 3D Studio Max to get a different aesthetic than what would be created at the traditional effects houses. That was a radical moment.
In our country's history, the world's history, actually, is the whole migration from minis to micros.
Yeah, exactly.
Affecting everyone, like the virus is affecting everyone today.
So to get back to the question you were talking about with what's the political ramifications of, I think we have a tremendous opportunity because we are now going to be starting to create greater and greater, more compelling virtual worlds because we are going to need to interact in a virtual context in a greater way. It's just going to be part of the nature of having this many billions of people on the planet with these kinds of pandemic possibilities, and they're not going to get less. Mm. They're going to get more because climate change is affecting the way in which these things get developed. So we are being forced into a virtual world in many ways. And so what the opportunity is we can create a virtual nation, a global human virtual nation that does not have the problems that nationalistic aspects have now on the world. And there is a way of mirroring a new model in the virtual world that I think could inform the quote-unquote real world.
Wow.
And that's the big opportunity for those of us that are involved as creators in this environment. It really comes down to what's the story we're going to tell. Just like America was created as a radical experiment out of monarchy, out of the control of a monarchy, we are now in a moment, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, I'm not talking to that specifically, I'm talking to the larger overall paradigm.
You mean like the torch of freedom can be passed into this world?
Exactly. And the freeing of our imaginations for us to imagine a better and more perfect union. You know, that right now we're hampered in that by all the mechanisms that have grown up like cancers around the body politic. Hmm. And so we can start fresh in the virtual world in a way that I think can have a greater innocence in many ways, a greater level of childhood wonder. And look, this may sound naive, and it is, because I want to maintain that kind of wonder in my expression and in my imagination and in the way in which I interact with humans. And so if it has to be in the virtual world, so be it.
Yeah, it kind of brings in the early days of virtual reality when we were talking about the rights of cyberspace.
And, exactly.
Yeah, and that perhaps today a virtual country could actually have some reality to it.
Look, it's funny. I mean, for all of you listeners in Santa Cruz, it is actually true that all these things were talked about in parties in Santa Cruz that Alan and I were like at a lot of the time.
That's true.
It blows my mind. It makes me
wonder, I have video.
You know, is this all just a consensual dream that we're creating ourselves? We party and get stoned and talk about these wild ideas, and then like here we are, you know, decades later, and it's literally formed around us. What the hell?
Did we create this? I'll have to go back and look at the tapes here.
Be careful what you wish for. It's coming.
Well, you're the one who's got the tapes, Al. You've got the archive.
That's true. Yeah, we must check this out here. I believe we're talking about how virtual worlds might actually get voting rights and be able to maybe even join the UN and have privileges that are on the level of a real country.
We actually had a conversation once about putting the server down into the Marianas Trench or something.
Yes, the Mariana Trench, independent of all, or in orbit even, right?
T3 lines from it, so it's in completely international waters, and so it has a complete diplomatic status and all of that stuff. I mean, these things are going to probably happen, man. It's wild. I really believe that we're now being pushed into considering greater paradigms of human communication and involvement.
Yes, which brings up the idea of what are the new stories. Like when I look at what's coming out on Amazon and stuff like that, I see some interesting. We just watched Upload. You seen that one?
Yep. And, it's in a stream that I've been part of, that's for sure. genre. It's the VR genre.
Yeah, so, and there was an idea that there was another world in which you would go instead of dying. You know, you would your brain would be uploaded to this other parallel universe.
Yep.
So this sort of thing is becoming more and more possibility. So it really is a good time to imagine what would be the new freedoms then. Would you say?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've been developing, you know, Lawmer Man Reborn for many years.
Yeah.
And in that, and this is from, you know, many years ago that I started this, in that story, a pandemic forces a certain component of culture more into virtual experience. And so I'm going, okay, I got to be careful about what I think. Is it just some weird dream I'm having?
Are you the prophet or the architect?
Or as Shakespeare would say, all is true.
I don't think I'm that from some meta level. It's just in my own life, is this just the lane that I'm creating by writing shit down? You know, it's just wild.
Yes, true. Well, what you think is, you know, especially if you're a writer of stories, and those stories are something are shared.
So,
you know?
So 2 days ago, there was a cartoon in the New Yorker. The New Yorker is one of my favorite magazines.
Yeah,
great cartoons. And the cartoon was an image from the Lawnmower Man of the big rig. You know, the geoscopic rig. It talked about it in the context of new virtual experience in the pandemic, so it all came full circle for me, and I'm like going, boy, be careful what stories you tell.
Yeah, this is kind of ironic because it's a virus these days, and back then I had actually written a book that was called Virus, you know, which was all about the computer viruses, which were just arising. So that's kind of come full circle. Now the biological viruses are, of course, you know, there's another loop to this. We'll probably create a new sophisticated computer viruses that will infect the virtual worlds.
Exactly. That's part of the story of Lawmer Man Reborn as well. It's called Mindfire. It really is about a pandemic in the virtual world. And then the whole point of the story is tracking down what's actually really causing it and how the group mind, the genius of the group mind, can create a better utopia.
So that becomes the story of the group mind versus dictators, in a sense, which is kind of the story of America in a way, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The power of the people.
I mean, we are in a full time of deconstruction, and now there's no denying that. And I don't think this election coming up is going to be a normal election in any way, shape, or form. Something new is going to appear, and it's a very, very unique time to be alive, that's for sure.
Well, where does your imagination go with this election a bit, it being different? Do you mean different candidates?
Well, I think the nature of how there's so many unknowns in the context of the voting system now and in the context of the need for remote aspects, all these things are going to create just great uncertainty and lack of verification for every side around everything. And so it's basically an entropic chaos equation that is running at us very quickly. And it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
Okay. It's kind of, you never know. We could have something like the Mule from Foundation Trilogy. Something strange, a new person.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, the funny thing is, again, all of these things are expressed in science fiction novels. At least 100 of them express each idea, you know?
Sure. Now, how about the big one? The rise of AI and decision-making.
Exactly.
AIs play a role in creating more freedom for us.
I believe that AI can actually reflect the better angels of our nature, and actually we can create one of the tropes of science fiction is our creating us creating our own god, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That was one of the great tropes of Philip K. Dick, of course. I believe AI can go that direction as opposed to it creating Skynet. We've talked about this before.
Right.
You know, we can actually, and the truth is, in any sufficiently advanced and sophisticated virtual world, AI is going to, by necessity, need to be part of managing it because it cannot be managed by typical human systems.
Right.
AI is going to be at the center of the virtual world experience, whether we like it or not, so we better mold it in the direction that reflects our better angels as opposed to reflects the reptilian brainstem theater that we see now.
Hopefully, yes. The idea also is embedding as well. That's something that's been talked about for a long time, and the convergence of man and machine.
Yeah.
But let's look at how that evolved, that myth can evolve after the break. We got to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back, okay? We're talking to Brett Leonard in L.A. and Bobby Wilder in San Francisco. And Mrs. Future of the controls, and I'm just behind the mic. Talk to you in a minute. I was blind. Welcome back to the Dr. Mrs. Future Show. We're talking to Brett Leonard in L.A. about some of the new myths of media that we have an opportunity to all help put out right now, like group mind versus dictators. I've got a question for the audience. Yeah, I've got one for you. Actually, two came in from one person wants to know if is Ready Player One a viable model for the future, in your opinion?
You know, look, here's how I feel about Ready Player One. Ready Player One, it shows such a dystopia, like everything's gone to shit, and that's why we're in a virtual world.
Yeah.
I don't think it has to be that. I think we can actually have a better, more utopian.
Right, that's what we're talking about. It's not utopian.
Yeah. In a way, Ready Player One's very kind of depressing.
Right.
Because of that. You know, it's like everything becomes a video game because everything else sucks. Not really my version of what true virtual intimacy will be about, what the way in which we can commune as souls is going to go beyond the video game metaphor. And virtual experience can, you know, tie into dream states, can tie into different meditative states, can tie into the brain machine interface, which gets into the whole transhuman subject matter you brought up, Alan.
Yeah.
You know, these are the things we need to focus on, expanding human experience because of virtual enablement, as opposed to contracting.
Okay, let's talk about that. Transhuman, humans 2.0, what does that look like to you? Do we have implants or not? Or do you think...
I think no matter, it's a force of nature. I think people that think of transhumanism and us changing the nature of our physical selves with technology, they see it as unnatural. There's nothing unnatural about it because it's coming from us. We're natural. We're part of the natural world. All the elements that go into creating the technology from the natural world, you know? It's just a natural evolution of us dealing with the issues of mortality, the great mystery of existence itself, and those things we are going to use, whatever tools and technology become available, to extend and expand those aspects of ourselves. That's endemic to the human being.
Right. Like the upload mythic, that we can upload our brains to another world and live forever there.
Yeah, I think in a weird way we probably already are doing that. The technology that we are not sufficiently aware of to understand.
Right. In other words, our own bodies, right? Our own biology that we barely understand which the virus is rapidly pointing out to us.
Exactly. The funny thing for me is how all of these sort of metaphors or things mirror each other.
Yeah.
Science wants to not acknowledge miracles, right? But yet they acknowledge that we're on a giant dust ball revolving around a helium furnace in the middle of an infinite void.
Yeah.
If that ain't a miracle, I don't know what is. The language, our languaging and our cognitive understanding from our limited perception of our short lifespans doesn't give us the perspective to understand that the miracle is happening right now around us all the time. Everything is sacred and divine, and yet that doesn't mean it precludes technology. Technology can be divine just as much as anything else can be. Yeah. It's about how we integrate it within ourselves. And that's the great story that I'm interested in telling.
Yes, yes. I'm thinking that we might actually have a Google that can not just access our human knowledge, but perhaps it would be shamanic and it would allow us to access the rest of the universe as well.
Yeah, like the Akashic Records. Like,
yeah, exactly. Those are kind of cosmic Googles that have existed in other times, and we're coming on our own, right? Where we combine.
There's so many things in science that start to reverberate with exactly these things. I mean, we're seeing that within the holographic nature of subatomic quantum mechanics, everything is there all the time. In one simulcrush. And this is stuff that empirical science starts to talk about. You know, it's like, the mystic and the scientific are definitely merging, and we're being brought to the necessity of that in a greater, greater way with each passing day, especially in a period of what we're experiencing now.
Yes, kind of the intersection of science and shamanism is speeding up.
Don't you think this is a great time for contemplation? I mean,
we've got more time to think about things. Yeah, I think so.
We're forced to like stop everything and like, well, either you can just lose yourself in infinite Netflix shows, or you can contemplate your own inner reality. And there's a great opportunity in that. And then literally, Gaia, the Earth itself, has told us, stop. You know, it's like nature's way of telling you something is wrong, just like the Blue Oyster Cult saying once.
Yeah. It's interesting how the most sophisticated, supposedly sophisticated life forms on the planet, i.e. our species, is being stopped or slowed so significantly by the simplest of life forms, or even life forms.
Just because it's the simplest doesn't mean it may not be more
advanced in some ways. Yeah. You know? Well, they might have a collaborative intelligence that's greater than ours. Because we're so individualistic, we don't connect as much as they do with each other. They have a system of voting that works for trillions of organisms.
Exactly.
Quorum sensing, I believe it's called. So maybe all those techniques of biology are actually our natural destiny that we could apply in creating infrastructure for ourselves on the next level of freedom.
I completely agree with that. I mean, I think that we live with so many other organisms as part of our biosphere.
Right.
And we are in constant collaboration with these organisms. So it's important that we learn what we can from them and make peace with them, as opposed to looking at them as the enemy. Because in some ways, I believe the Gaian mind through the coronavirus is basically waking the species up to look at some shit.
So and perhaps time to wake up to that.
Time for us. Yes, there's always been attrition in every expansion of consciousness in the history of this planet. And so there's going to be attrition, and how we handle that attrition, how we lessen the suffering, is the indication of our own humanity, the evolvement of our own civilization. And this is really bringing that into bas relief right now, that's for sure.
Got another question from the audience. What about opportunities for indie filmmakers today? What would you suggest for film?
Well, look, indie filmmaking has been a great opportunity that's been happening since the fact that you can actually shoot a movie with your frickin' phone. There's a content market in the streaming services that is desperate for new content because content has been slowed down. So the opportunity is to go out there with your phone right now and make something that is going to blow everyone away, and that is purely about your use of cinematic language and how potent you can create something in this medium.
Yes.
And the tools are all there to do it with nothing, almost. It's an amazing time.
Yes, so let's talk about cinematic language for a minute. Can you tell the audience exactly what you mean by that? Is a visual audio language that their media has been evolving for the last 100 years or so?
Yeah, I mean, cinematic language has, been studied by, it's not a new thing. The cinematic language is a language form. There is a rhetoric to it. It is constantly expanding. It's only been around for a little over 100 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not, it's not like it's that codified at this point. It's very much still evolving. I believe that virtual immersive experience is all part of the evolution of cinema. Cinema being this media reflection of our own consciousnesses that we accept certain rules and language forms for in order to allow us to receive what that is.
Do you think it's a universal language? Do you think all of the species speaks the cinema language on some level?
I do. Cinema has worked everywhere it has ever gone. There's a tremendous program that was on Hulu. If you got some time on your hands out there.
Hulu, okay. What are we looking for?
It's a 10-part thing called The Story of Film. And at first you think it's going to be some Hollywood story. It's literally about the story of cinema across the globe in places that most people have never even thought had cinema. And it's astonishing what's been done in cinematic language in the history of cinema across the world.
Wow. So it's a real education in style and technique. And maybe you can...
And just what people have thought in terms of how cinema can be expanded to express as an art form. And it's not done. So to any filmmakers, take whatever tools you can have, which are amazing right now, and create your expression of cinematic language and change the world. That is the opportunity, and there's almost no barrier of resistance to it like there used to be.
Mm. There's a question of whether or not, is there any kind of social media that you prefer for evolving this idea?
Well, I believe all social media is basically in an early nascent stage, and that it is very fragmented.
Right at this point, huh?
And that what I believe is that it's all going to be brought together into what I call this world-building process, that it will be these worlds, virtual worlds, that we will have social engagement and interaction in, and that so everything that you have in all the different slices of social media will actually be combined within one world, virtual world experience, and that's where it's all moving to. So the slices and how it's fragmented now is very inefficient.
So you're saying it's going from many different languages to one sort of a...
It doesn't mean there won't be different languages within the paradigm of the one. It's just the idea that you're going to be engaged in a world where you have all these different ways of communicating, interacting in the same way that you use filters and social media and certain kinds of posts. All these things are just language forms that are nascent to creating an overall world-building process.
Gotcha. Brett, we're on our final minute, believe it or not. Went fast, huh? If people want to know more about you and your work, where do you suggest they go?
You can find me on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and on Twitter. Twitter is at Director Leonard, and on Facebook it's just my name, and on LinkedIn it's just my name.
Yeah, so, and you can look you up on...
I respond to people that reach out to me in those places.
Okay, very good. Oh, and thanks, Brett. Obviously, we needed more time to really delve deeply into this, but still, I think we touched a few neurons out there.
Thanks so much. Great talk.
Yeah. Great. Bye-bye. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, that was great. Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Love. Lots of love. All right, everybody. That's it for Dr.
Thank you, Bobby.